Welcome back, everybody, to the Gaming News Canada Show podcast. As always, I'm your host, Steve McAllister. Last month, Australian digital sports media company Basketball Forever announced the completion of a $4 million funding round led by YOLO Investments, with contributions from a couple of American venture capital companies, friends of Gaming News Canada, Chris Grove and Benji Cherniak, former Pinnacle Sports CEO Paris Smith, and Fifth Street Gaming's Chief Strategy Officer Seth Young, who are among those new investors. So with that, we want to invite the Chief Strategy Officer of Basketball Forever, Nick Kellen, to join us on the podcast. And Nick, so great to see you again.
Yeah, good to be here. It's been a few months since we first crossed paths in Vegas at G2E, but it's nice to be reconnected, and big fan of the show and all that you guys do with both Canadian news coverage and then some broader, like, you know, North American, US stuff as well. So good to be with you.
Yeah, great. Appreciate that, Nick. And listen, congratulations to both you and Alex Slumsky, your CEO. When we saw you in Las Vegas back in October, you guys were, I think you probably blew away the Steps app or the health app on your iPhones with the way you guys were hustling to pull together your funding back then. Maybe we can just start off by just telling us a little bit about last month's announcement and what it means for the company and what it's going to allow you to do.
Yeah, I mean, we always had a vision when we started going to market with, you know, the beta test of a couple of proprietary game formats that we'd built out. You know, for people that don't know who we are the number one most engaged with social sports publisher globally amongst sort of 18 to 35 year olds from a, you know, retention, stickiness standpoint. We launched a sort of free-to-play suite of games back in 2021, back end of 2021, which we've been sort of testing and iterating with over the last 18 months, give or take. And when we came over to Vegas, we knew that that was the kickoff of our sort of Series A round, if you wanted to call it that. We knew we'd reached sort of critical audience scale. We knew that we had a really compelling product that we'd proven had good market fit, and we could acquire users at super low cost because of the funnel that we'd built. And so the goal was to tell that story to people in the industry who wanted to see something a little bit different, you know, in the way that companies think about growing product, and then more importantly, how to actually build a relatively stable path to profitability, which I think doesn't exist in a lot of businesses currently operating in the market. So yeah, the story of the funding round went like that. You know, G2E was a big week for us. It was our sort of second week, you know, post kicking off the round, and we met some great industry experts there who ended up coming onto the cap table and putting money into the business. And you know, it was a bit of a baptism of fire in that regard. With specific, I guess, answering to the question of what we're going to use that funding for, it allows us to refine product quite quickly. It accelerates product roadmap time a lot. We're launching two new game formats and then full launching the you know, original version of the app. Vote is what it's currently called. So, you know, developers and engineers and a couple of people sitting in more senior seats on that side, the money's helpful for that. It's helpful for expanding the business commercially into the States. You know, we're about to close Q1 off as the best first 3 months of a year in the business's history. That's purely by just bringing operations over to North America and being able to tap into new networks over here, given the majority of our audience is stateside. And then we're also expanding into new media verticals. So we've just launched our new baseball vertical. We're in late stage with getting football off the ground and then hockey before the Stanley Cup final starts. So it's an exciting time for the company. It's probably long overdue in the sense of scale and sort of horizontal scale. But now that we've got boots on the ground over here, we're starting to see what we anticipated would happen is playing out.
Yeah, and the one thing we didn't expect, Nick, when we started this interview was I just found out that you had a bit of an earthquake in New York City this morning where you're based now. So I honestly don't think I've ever heard of an earthquake in New York. So I guess one more bit of excitement for you living in the U.S. now.
Yeah, I was looking at, so for context, it's, you know, it's 1 p.m. here. At about 10 a.m., I was on a call and I had my monitor open and my laptop open, and my monitor fell over flat on its face. And I'm in a high-rise apartment and I'm up quite high working from home today. And the whole room started shaking. I'm from Australia, you know, on the East Coast originally in Sydney. Never felt an earthquake in my life. And this was the first one I'd ever had. And I thought it was construction work. I thought that there was something going on in the floors below me. But I then go on Twitter and see, you know, all over my newsfeed, like, is that real? Did the earthquake just happen in New York? I figure from the reaction and the amount of noise that it's got, it either doesn't ever happen or has happened very, very rarely over the last however many hundred years. So that was a that was an exciting start to my Friday. Definitely wasn't what I didn't have it on my bingo card this morning when I woke up, put it that way.
Hopefully the weekend's a little less eventful for you. Basketball Forever launched back in 2015, and we were talking a bit before we hit the record button on the podcast about, I did a Google search this morning to get a little bit more information on the company, and I've seen so many different labels for you guys. It's, you know, the basketball highlights get mentioned, social media platform, a sports content brand, digital media startup, fantasy sports company, free-to-play gaming, and, you know, I'm sure that search is, it's an evolution of the company. But on the other hand, I think probably to be a sports media brand these days, you have to have the ability to do a little bit of everything, don't you?
Yeah, look, I think the truth of who we are is it is a little bit jack of all tradey. I mean, we did start in its most pure sense as like a socially distributed independent media company. We have nailed that, you know, over the last 10 years, we've grown the audience scale. We now reach, you know, 110 million uniques a month in 70 countries. And we're the biggest social brand in Australia, have been 5 years straight. Last year, we accounted for roughly 11% of every single social action taken in the country. And the US is our biggest audience segment. Like I mentioned, we reach 40 to 45 million uniques in the US every single month. So we sort of like have ticked all the boxes on that side so far from a pure audience scale standpoint. And then, as I mentioned earlier in this podcast, the expansion, or I guess like the diversification of revenue streams and product into the sort of iGaming, you know, free-to-play, moving towards real money gaming realm is where we see significant scale, I think. So the truth of the matter is having sort of, I guess, these disparate definitions of who we are makes sense because we do try and touch a lot of different things. And now with new sports media verticals coming online and new sports that we're covering, we are, you know, going after a bigger piece of the pie. So at its purest form, we are an independent media player. You know, we rely heavily on brand partnerships, programmatic stuff right now, the revenue piece, but we hope that that is replaced by what we're building on the product side over the next sort of 18 months.
That audience reach that you mentioned, Nick, it's so hard to get to a place where you can start to generate meaningful revenue. And I just wonder, you know, it's such a crowded house today in terms of sports content. And I just wonder, like, what made the company decide on basketball and what's been successful in getting that audience built?
I think there's a few things, right? So we were very, very steadfast from the beginning on doing a truly global sport. I think you can get very stuck in the weeds in America with going after a football because it engages so highly and so many people watch it. But, you know, the majority of the world doesn't play it. The majority of the world doesn't actually care about it. Basketball is truly global. It's growing. It was growing in Australia when we started. It's now the most participated in sport in Australia, which people wouldn't probably anticipate. They think of cricket, you know, which is the sport that I played for 20 years growing up, and I still play in New York with a bunch of Australian expats. Like, basketball has been a sort of sleeping giant in a number of different pockets of the world. And then obviously the US was the father of it, but it was global. The games were on in a time zone that made it really easy to cover from Australia. The games basically from the east to the west coast start 10 a.m. Australian time and finish at the end of the workday. So we had a team that was on, and we would often find ourselves breaking news and being first to the jump with things. And we zeroed in on a design language, and the way that we conveyed news and storylines was very illustrative. It was a quality that still is significantly higher than Bleachers and House of Highlights and the NBA themselves, because we have a team of designers in-house who have sort of got formulaic and mechanized with how we run the show for the last better part of a decade. So we've built like a brand equity over time. Our audiences know what to expect from us. They know that we're going to be delivering content that is both innovative, it's fresh, it's got new angles. But the main thing is they can look at it. It doesn't matter what language you speak, where you are, how much money you have, who you're friends with. You can look at this and within a second, you'll know exactly what the story is based off how we tell stories visually, essentially. And that's always been at the core of how we convey news and how we convey content. And we're going to carry that through baseball. We're going to carry that through football. We're going to carry that through hockey. And it builds that snowball effect, right? You don't churn people very much when you operate like that.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting, Nick. Like, it's this appropriate week for us to have this conversation because the Ontario regulated sports betting and iGaming market turned two on Thursday this week, and IGO did release a little bit of data, and it does show that basketball is the most bet on sport by the I think there's around 25 to 30 regulated sports books in the province now. And I think that caught a few people off guard when the IGO press release came out on Thursday. And it's a week where Vince Carter was just named. Vince is going into the Basketball Hall of Fame. You know, you talk to anybody who's familiar with the Raptors, and including people who have covered the Raptors for a long period of time, and they'll say that Carter was the guy who kind of put the Toronto Raptors on the map and put really sparked the participation rates to spike in basketball in this country. But I couldn't agree more. You look at the impact that Yao Ming had on basketball in China, and you know, the Aussies are always a team that are fun to watch at the World Championships and the Olympics. And your point about comparing hoops with football couldn't be more bang on. I mean, basketball truly is a global sport.
Yeah. I think it probably doesn't surprise us as much on the gambling side. You know, being from Australia, we've been betting on mobiles for 15 years, right? 20 years. And basketball is such a good product from that standpoint because it's frequent, it's every day, it goes for a long period of time, it's global, as we mentioned. You know, there's good betting markets and good quality basketball being played in Europe. Obviously, I think Australia, the NBL and the EuroLeague can probably butt heads about what the second best basketball league in the world is, but it's those two probably on the podium next to the NBA. So you touch time zones all over the world. You have players all over the world that you recognize, that you know who they are. And like I said, it's every single day. So that's where it probably beats out the NFL, which is a, you know, 16 week of the year product, and it's once a week in those 16 weeks. So that's where I think basketball wins. But basketball also does just such a good job of like marketing the game outside the game. The NFL has come a long way on that side, but the narratives and the storyline that exist in basketball outside the actual, you know, what happens between the four lines is as compelling as what happens on a night-to-night basis from a pure, you know, game standpoint. So it doesn't surprise me as much on that front, but that's not to say that the quality of what we've got on the US piece is just as good, right? Like the Native American sports, and I think that you'll see hockey as well, is starting to really, really come along in leaps and bounds from how people sort of consume that content, what they want to see. It's a sport that I think, or I have the most stock in over the next 5 years, is like outstripping probably growth forecasts and growth predictions from both a player base standpoint and also supporters. So it's in a good spot. US sport is in a great place.
Yeah, you know, it's funny, Nick, just on basketball. I mean, I grew up as a teenager in Eastern Ontario, and back then, the NBA actually playoff games were recorded. You had to stay up till like 11 o'clock at night to watch an NBA playoff game. And when David Stern came in, people always point to the NBA and say it was the salary cap to save basketball. And I just don't buy that. I mean, Stern happened to come in at a time when all of a sudden you had, you know, Larry Bird arrived and Magic Johnson and those great Lakers teams and the Lakers-Celtic rivalry. And it was really those stars coming in. And listen, David Stern deserves a ton of credit for realizing the way to get to make NBA basketball popular was to market those stars. But it was both the arrival of those great players and Stern realizing there was a chance to monetize those great stars. That's what got the NBA out of, you know, tape showing recorded games at 11 o'clock at night to being arguably the biggest professional sports league today, although obviously the NFL in the U.S. has the massive TV numbers and that, but I don't think there's a bigger global sports league than the National Basketball Association.
Yeah. Stern was amazing. I think Adam Silver gets it commercially as well. I think that as long as the NBA keeps putting people in that seat that understand how fans actually think and how they consume content, everything's done on a second screen. Everything is drama, you know, narrative driven. It's I think that those two guys have both been like sort of home runs. And so hopefully whoever takes over Adam Silver's spot whenever he decides to pull the pin is as good.
And Nick, I got to ask you, because we're doing this interview heading into the March Madness, the men's and women's NCAA basketball finals. And I just wonder how much of Basketball Forever's focus is on the NCAA, and also given the popularity of Caitlin Clark and just the boom in women's sports in general around North America right now. Are you focusing, is the company focusing more attention on college basketball and women's basketball in particular?
Women's college basketball has outstripped men's for us massively in the last even couple of months, I would say. We tend to not touch the NCAA tournament as much. We definitely step up the coverage around sort of like a late eight time. But the Caitlin Clark, you know, NCAA women's tournament, even the way that UConn's playing, LSU's got some interesting storylines. That's trended really well for us. So we definitely cover the back end of the tournament with them. I think what's going on in women's basketball is awesome. It's a product that I've actually watched quite a lot over the past few years. I think that from a pure, you know, if you're a pure basketball fan, the game itself is really good. The way that they think about it, the way that they have to scheme against one another. If you have a knock on the NBA, it's very ISO heavy. It becomes an athlete v athlete situation, which is, you know, it's an elite product. It's awesome. But the WNBA is trending in a really, really good direction. It's a product that, like I said, I watch a lot of personally. I think that they are supremely talented, and I think that the sport's in a really good space right now. And obviously you get people like Caitlin Clark come along who, you know, if she stays healthy her entire career, she probably will end up being the best women's player to ever hold a basketball. I think that's not a reach to say. And so, yeah, we absolutely do cover it. It's trending. The other thing anecdotally that I would say is, you know, if we're addressing the elephant in the room, media outlets have always they will post something about women's basketball or women's sport, and you go to the comments and it's like a cesspool, right? It's a cesspit of, you know, losers who are going at each other and you know, basically spraying women's sport, which is it's an unfortunate reality of sort of how the media landscape existed. Speaking anecdotally with like the Caitlin Clarks of the world and what's been going on that side, we don't see that anymore. Like, There's an appetite there, and there is an acceptance, and like, okay, I look at what she's doing. It's like, oh, you know, I can't actually go into the comments and be like a dick about this. Like, it's, you know, and that's where the sport needs to get to. It's a point where it's like, okay, I want to go and watch this product, right? I'm not doing it because I'm a fan of the sport. I'm not doing it because I feel like I need to. It's like the other day, like I'm watching Iowa play. I'm watching UConn play, right? I'm doing it over watching an NBA game. And that's how you know that the sport is growing and it's in a healthy spot. So I'm very, very bullish on the growth of WNBA. I think that Caitlin Clark's a once-in-a-generation talent who's going to dominate at the pros probably first year out. But yeah, I'm excited to watch how that landscape continues to evolve.
Yeah, such a great point, Nick, about not feeling that you have to watch it. And I think that was we have evolved, and there's still a bit of work to do, but I think we've gotten past the place where on Twitter, people you almost feel like you're obligated to watch a women's sporting event just to show support for women's sport. And I think what we've seen, and this is really true with the creation of the Professional Women's Hockey League and the launch of that league this year, is you want to watch a product because it's a good product. And I'm finding myself, my wife and I, on weekends now, if we have a choice between an NHL game and a PWHL game, we'll sometimes watch the PWHL game because I'm interested in the players and I like the product. And it's not a sympathy thing anymore. And I think we've also gotten past the point where we're demanding that companies sponsor women's sports because they should, to the point where you look at, I think, what, 13 million people watched that LSU Iowa State game on Monday night. And if you're a sponsor now, you've got to be attached to women's sports because it makes good sense commercially.
Yeah, well, no, 100% agree with you. No pushback on any of those points at all.
Nick, let's get into a little bit. You mentioned the free-to-play game, and this is something I talked to Josh Turk from Low Six about a couple of months ago, and We had Justin Park from Betty Gaming on the podcast a couple of weeks ago, and both those fellows discussed the increasing importance of free-to-play games and gamification and why it's relevant to the gambling industry. And I'd just love to get your take on what sparked Basketball Forever to go down the free-to-play path. And maybe you mentioned at the top of the interview just the evolution and that you guys are in the process of launching a couple more free-to-play products.
Yeah, we just saw it as a good opportunity to keep people sticky. Anything that we can do to provide better native experiences for our audience, we're going to run at. We're going to have a crack at. We knew that our audience had a propensity to play on a second screen. So that was a big part of it. But also, you know, like I said, we reach people all over the world of varying levels of income, of varying levels of, you know, financial health, country GDPs, so on and so forth. So the goal for us was to originally kick off with like a free-to-play suite of games and then monetize where we could for people who wanted to do that, right? We want to just be a one-stop shop for people to go and get their news and content, play games. You know, a nightly ritual for them in America is putting the NBA on and sitting with us, right? And giving us their time and energy, whether that's in a live action basketball bingo game, whether it's in a live action prediction game, whether it's in a pregame pick'em format, you know, and then while they're doing that, we are feeding them the narratives and the stories that are most compelling around the league. So that was the model. It was very simple. We knew that we had the audience and the eyeballs to acquire at low cost, which was a big thing for us. It's not a sustainable business model if you're spending, you know, and I think that, unfortunately, my prediction with the industry is that a lot of the smaller players and even mid-tier players, we're going to have a graveyard, a sort of consolidation of a number of those groups that just can't compete on a spend standpoint to acquire. But we knew we had competitive advantage there. So we take the responsibility to innovate really strongly. We have a crack hot team of people on product and people who sit in advisory roles with us who have been there and done that and helping us inform and sort of shape the way we think about product roadmap. But at the end of the day, the goal for us is to, if we keep the user experience at the forefront of everything we do and every decision we make, then we should be okay.
And Nick, as an old school sports media guy, I mean, it warms my heart when I hear you talk about breaking news and it's kind of ironic. We were talking about women's sports a few minutes ago, and we're at a spot with the media industry right now where see layoffs across sports media all the time. There's probably never been more sports to cover because of the explosion in women's sports. And you talk about cricket, and we see cricket becoming a very popular sport in Canada. And I think that's the next sport that's really going to take off. And we've seen over probably the last 20 years the growth of rugby in this country and in the U.S. as well. And again, I think it's easy for a lot of media companies to try to hitch their wagon to doing highlight videos and TikTok stuff and do almost the cheap clicks. It reminds me of the days of when I worked at Yahoo, and if we were trying to increase page views around the Olympics, we'd run photo galleries of beach volleyball players. And I'd love to hear just a little bit about the company's strategy on having that blend of obviously highlights and viral moments, but also doing a little bit of journalistic stuff as well and trying to break stories.
Yeah, I think that was probably what got us into the game in the beginning, was like a love of genuine sports media and delivering the product into people's phones, right? Like that was what the media, or I guess like what the media arm was built upon and founded upon. So we enjoy that side of the business. I think that, you know, we fall victim to it as well in the way that media models work now, and you're trying to make money as a company. Like, you are going to go and chase things that engage. You're going to chase things that have viral potential. And it's a little bit of a lonely world if you're just trying to slog away with beat reporters and people on the ground and be first in news with things. But when those opportunities do arrive, it's something that we really like the opportunity to tap into. And we're opportunistic with that stuff. We always will be. But yeah, I think I started my career working as a journalist with Channel 9 in Australia, and I did a lot of cricket and basketball coverage. And those days of like the digital media model with, you know, old school, deeply considered, thoughtful journalism practices, it's dying. And, you know, in this industry, you have to evolve or die, but you don't have to do it, I think, totally at the expense of, you know, those original practices that, you know, the industry was founded upon, if you want to call it that.
you know, I was lucky to join Yahoo in 2010, and that was kind of the glory days of Yahoo Sports, where they had seized upon this idea that they went out and hired some of the best sports columnists across the United States, and then also started these sports blogs. And Greg Wyshynski, who now is ESPN's national hockey writer, was the editor of the Puck Daddy blog back then. And Greg could write authoritatively on hockey, but at the same time, they'd had a lot of fun with their jersey foul series, which is, you know, just taking pictures of people wearing strange jerseys at NHL games, and seized on those viral moments. And you really saw it with Yahoo's Olympics coverage, where they broke stories. You know, they would set an agenda and kind of lead a story, but then they captured those crazy moments. And in the U.S., that was the secret sauce, because NBC wouldn't show live events. So Yahoo would be reporting on live events that if you were sitting at home watching TV in the U.S., you wouldn't see an event till 10 o'clock at night that happened at 1 o'clock in the afternoon. But if some swimmer fell into the pool or bumped their head in the diving board or whatever, Yahoo had posted that at 1:06. And so I couldn't agree more. I think there still is room to do journalism that makes a difference. There still is a lot of value if you're a place where you break news. And there's a reason why Woj has millions of followers on Twitter. If you become a source of breaking news, but can also have a little bit of fun as well, I think that's a combination that you want to have.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. I totally, totally agree with you.
A word from our sponsor.
Hey there, sports fans. Are you looking for fresh and fun takes on the hottest topics in Canadian sports? Well, we've got just what you need. Introducing Homestand Sports Today, your go-to daily sports newsletter, bringing you the Canadian angle on the hottest NHL, NBA, footy stories, and more right to your inbox. But wait, there's more. Homestand Sports isn't just another text-heavy newsletter. Every story has its own video featuring our talented hosts like me, Albert Vartanian, giving you a newsletter experience like never before. And did I mention it's a free subscription? Subscribe now at homestand.ca.
Now back to the show.
Nick, I'd love to talk just about your own personal journey at all, too. You talk about being a journalist, and again, I think a lot of us that are journalists, we don't ever see the day where we're part of a startup business or that we consider ourselves to be entrepreneurs. But what kind of led you down the path to helping create Basketball Forever?
I was always gung-ho on being a broadcaster in Australia. I grew up, you know, these names won't really have much weight or carry much relevance to this audience, but I grew up listening to Tony Gregg and Richie Beno and guys who are basically the most famous and most well-respected cricket broadcasters ever. Like I said, cricket was sort of like my primary sport when I was a kid. So I grew up watching them, and I loved their ability to sort of beam. Like, I could be on holidays in Tasmania with my family at the bottom of the world, and Australia could be playing West Indies in Brisbane, and I'd be able to watch that and hear them sort of like guide us through that coverage or guide us through that product. And I thought that was the coolest thing in the world, and I always looked up to them. So my goal was to be that, right, in like the next generation of people. They were on their way out, and we were up and coming and young. And so I studied media and communications at the University of Sydney, and I was doing the whole nine yards on unpaid interning with semi-professional sports teams, doing PR work and, you know, piece to cameras for 35 people. I was doing all that, and then, you know, sort of like worked my way up, and I got a really good gig with Channel 9 when I was 21, looking after, the Ashes coverage, which is the biggest cricket tournament in the world, most historical, and the FIBA World Cup in China back now nearly 6 years ago. And that was how I was working, and I just realized that the way media was when I was a kid had changed so much now that it was around, you know, and it's ironic to say because this is what we now do, but it was all about headlines and clicks and how to engage. And that like pure journalistic, you know, itch that I had to scratch wasn't there anymore. And TV rights were a dying breed. So those opportunities didn't really exist, particularly in Australia. The US is a bit different, but you come over sounding like an Aussie, you're not getting a look in anywhere to go and talk about sport. Like, what do I know about ice hockey? What does a 5'11" kid from Sydney know about the NBA? I can't go and hang with Reggie Miller and JJ Redick on TNT. Like, that's just not it's not my field. So I needed to find another way to be involved in the industry that I really enjoyed, but in a different capacity. So that was how I sort of found my way working on more like the strategic operational side, where I could scratch the itch that was there, but ultimately try and add value in more of a niche. So that was my background. I've always been around sports media and sort of auxiliary sports media products. But now, you know, this gig that we're in at the moment combines most of my loves around sports betting and gaming and the way that that industry is moving. And I love the ability to stay on top of like the changing current of regulatory concerns and headwinds and how to zig when they zag. And, you know, I take that as like a real, you know, badge of like pride to be able to be around that industry and to play in that industry. And then obviously on the media side, it's very rare that you get to find an opportunity where you can connect with, you know, tens of millions up to 100 million people a month with what you guys are saying. So it's a good spot we're in, and I'm enjoying the ride. And I'm hoping that over the next couple of years, more people start to see what we're about and how good we are at what we do.
Yeah, and I think the other thing too, Nick, is with the globalization of sport, it no longer is strange if you're talking about hockey with an Australian accent. People know whether you're legit or you're a phony. And I think that's the one beauty about social media. And there's lots not to like about social media these days. But if you're a young person or if you're a person who doesn't work for the mainstream media outlet, you can carve yourself out a niche as an expert. And that's I think that's good. I think the more experts we can have in hockey, and I follow all kinds of people. I follow journalists and columnists and reporters and stats geeks. And I think there's a whole big ocean out there now of experts covering sports. And like I said, it no longer has to be a white guy who speaks Canadian English who's considered an authority in hockey, for example.
Yeah, I agree. And look, like, you know, basketball is probably the sport I know most about, but over 10 plus years of following the sport as closely as we do, I feel like we have insights, right? Like, yes, I can't dunk. I can't like, you know, 30 foot like step backs, but I feel like I know the sport back to front. So yeah, I agree with you. And that's probably the best thing that's happened to the industry is the fact that now that everything's broken down, there's no borders. Whoever is the best at what they do comes out ahead. So that's something that I'm like in agreement with you on.
Yeah. And I think, to be honest, Nick, that's what's hurt newspapers is I think newspapers have been slow to adapt to what's happening out there. And just, you know, obviously the commercial side, I mean, that's a whole other story. And I'm not sure if and when the newspaper industry will ever figure out how to create new revenue streams. But on the other hand, I think, you know, things like doing more investigative journalism, you know, covering women's, investing in women's sports and investing smartly in sports or athletes or events that people care about. I just feel that newspapers have been a little late to the party and have been left behind in a lot of cases.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I think that, honestly, newspapers are going to need to just... Look, newspapers have survived for hundreds of years. I think that there's always going to be a market for them, and there are people that do just like holding it in their hands. But yeah, you're exactly right. It's an innovate or die industry. So I'm interested to see how they do progress from here.
Yeah, and good journalism holds people accountable, and that's why it's so important to have journalism at every level now, whether it's a local community newspaper or newspapers in a big city or having national political reporters, because journalism is the one thing that still really holds people accountable.
Agreed entirely.
Hey, Nick, a couple more questions. I would like to get your thoughts on, especially with you being based in the U.S. now, and I know you and Alex have been following the overturning of PASPA in 2018 and the growth of regulated sports betting across the U.S. and now of course here in Ontario. Where do you see basketball forever kind of fitting in with regulated gambling in North America?
Look, it's really hard to predict. I think that we like to stay really flexible with the potential opportunities that are out there. and building game modes that have the flexibility to, if we decided one day to turn monetization rails on, we would do it in a way that was, you know, compliant and regulated. And we have a crack hot group of advisors who can assist us and hold our hands through that. I mean, look, we love the industry. We know of its shortcomings. We know of the, you know, patron protections and the responsibilities that we carry out as a conveyor of noise with big traffic and big engagement. So it's one of those things where we're sort of read and reacting. We're very lean. We move quickly. We are dynamic with the way that we think about product evolution. For sure, we will be looking at things like freemium models with some of our free-to-play games as like an initial testing on a few different parts. But you know, you'd be lying if you said that sports betting and iGaming is the fastest growing industry in America. You would be lying if you said that it wasn't something that, if you could do it in a way that was compliant and regulated, that you wouldn't be open to that opportunity. So that's the way we think about it from a product and sort of like business, you know, development or evolution standpoint.
I think one of the hot button topics with the launch of regulated sports betting, Nick, has been the attempt to integrate sports media and sports betting content. And we've seen in Canada, there were some examples where it was done very poorly out of the gate because there was this rush in a highly competitive market for brands to get their names out there and acquire customers. I assume that you had those conversations again, and with Basketball Forever, is how do you make sure that there is, you know, a way to smartly do integrate sports betting into your content, and at the same time not lose the identity of what has made Basketball Forever successful?
It's one of those things where if sports betting and, you know, predictive analytics and tipping and different things, if that's something that our users want, we'll feed it to them, right? And the goal is to do that in an industry leading way. That's the truth of it. So it's one of those things where we're not going to pin our flag to the mast either way. Like I said before, we stay dynamic, we stay evolving. And if we do go down that path more heavily, then we do it in a way that is true to the way that we've built the brand over the last 10 years. It would not be done in like a slapstick approach. It wouldn't be done with like low thought and you know, low tactile touch point. It would be well thought out and considered, and we would build it organically in the same way that we've built the business from you know, day one, essentially.
Is Canada part of the strategy for the company right now?
100%. We reach 3 million Canadians a month. It's a growing segment for us. Canadian basketball is in maybe the best place it's ever been. So it's a huge, huge focus point for us. We're in late stage conversations with a couple of Canadian brand partners. We view Canada as like a top three market for us, essentially.
And last question, Nick. You know, having come off this $4 million funding round, like any advice that you would give to young companies out there that are out there trying to get funding, just in terms of, you know, when do you make that decision? Yeah, we need to go raise money. And then the network, and again, you and Alex were running around the Venetian, like the Ben Johnson of 1988 at G2E.
I think it's a combination of two things. One is raise when you need to raise, right? Raise when it makes sense to raise. I think a lot of groups and companies will raise sort of just off a whim. It's because it's a nice story, or that, you know, growth capital is not always the best way for the business to move forward. So do it when you need to is the first thing. And the second thing is the market environment right now for capital raising is pretty tough, right? I think everyone knows that. It's not 2021 anymore. But if you have something of value and you fire enough bullets, people will see your vision and will understand it. So it's about using networks to connect to the right people, having a very, very thick skin, because most people you talk to are not going to like you and what you have and your story, even though you think it's the best thing in the world. So if you combine those things and just stay realistic about the process, people are trusting you with their money, with their hard earned. So it's a responsibility to take on. It's not trivial. And if you do that with sort of like the integrity that I think we carried ourselves during the raise process and how we are managing it moving forward, ultimately you'll end up being someone that people want to do work with and trust you with that stuff. So that would be my advice. Seek feedback. Don't get offended at all when people come back to you with negative criticism. And if you do that, then eventually you'll win. You just got to keep showing up.
Great advice. That is Nick Kellen, the Chief Strategy Officer of Basketball Forever. Hey, Nick, thanks so much for doing this. Really great to see you again. Let's get on with you later on this year, maybe before the Paris Olympics this summer, and we can talk a bit about the men's and women Olympic basketball tournaments and Canada's medal hopes. And wish you and Alex and everybody else at the company continued success.
Really appreciate it. Thanks so much for the time, Steve. And that sounds great. I think Canada's in with a chance to actually win the whole thing. So looking forward to chatting then.
Excellent. As always, you can find the Gaming News Canada Show podcast on our website at gamingnewscanada.ca, along with the various podcast platforms. We try to do these podcasts twice a week, so really appreciate everyone who listens to the podcast and for people like Nick Kellen for showing up and being our guest. That's it for this edition of the Gaming News Canada Show, and we will see you again soon.
Thank you for listening to the Gaming News Canada Show. Sign up for our newsletter at gamingnewscanada.ca. Follow Steve McAllister on LinkedIn. Message Steve if you're interested in being a sponsor or featured guest.